We do what we can when we can, but we can't save everyone. All we can do is honor their lives by continuing to serve those in need. When that didn't make him feel better, he rose from the bed and stalked into the bathroom. He stripped out of his clothes, tossing them in the corner, and stepped into the enormous slate and glass shower stall. 4 people could comfortably shower together here. Last week it had taken him several minutes to figure out all of its nozzles. Now he set them all to 94 degrees. Any other day, he'd never stand there, watching gallons of water flush down the drain for an unnecessary shower. Had he convinced himself that the citrus-scented shampoo and soap might wash away his angst or his worry for other friends who might become targets? More the fool. The hot water didn't even ease the tension in his shoulders. He toweled off and then rummaged in his drawer for clean boxers. Pacing the room, he shook out his arms. Eventually, he pulled back the gauzy drapes and peered into the darkness, catching sight of his own reflection. He ran his hand through his hair and rubbed his jaw. Clean-shaven, another rare circumstance that he didn't want to grow accustomed to. Below him, a golden glow shone onto the lower deck from the living room. He heard nothing, though. Perhaps Gentry had fallen asleep on the sofa, like she'd done twice this past week. Gentry. He hadn't meant to snipe at her, but she kept pushing, always seeking a way in. She didn't respect boundaries, not her brother's, not his. Infuriating. And yet, she was generous and playful. He'd been mesmerized today, brightened by his proximity to all of her sparkle and youthful exuberance. He couldn't recall the last time he'd felt so free. She'd also spent her evening reading up on NGOs. For him. He'd repaid her interest and efforts with insults. He'd been an ass, mostly out of fear of his own confused emotions. His father wouldn't understand. Not even a duty to his own wife and child had kept him from putting himself on the line for others. Yet here Ian sat, in this safe, lavish home, while others fought on in his absence, some losing their lives in the process. In the quiet, he wondered with a shudder whether his dead father could see into his heart to the most unwelcome truth, to the part of him that wanted to stay put, that wanted the kind of happy moments and memories Gentry promised. He laughed aloud at the ludicrous reality. 8 days? 8 days since meeting Gentry Cabot, and his life had run amok. She was a different kind of natural disaster, he supposed, but none of his skills could save him from the danger she posed. Tap, tap, tap. He glanced over his shoulder toward the bedroom door. Ian, I see your light on. Beneath the small space at the bottom of the door, a shadow fell from where her bare feet stood. Relentless woman! Had she marched up here to punish him? He certainly deserved that. He crossed the room and stood, hand on the doorknob, forehead pressed to the door, not knowing what he wanted or what to say. Ian, she said, her voice low. Please. Closing his eyes briefly, he opened the door. She stood in the hallway, arms at her sides, chin raised, proud as ever. When her gaze dipped to his bare chest, she pressed her lips together and raised her eyes to meet his. I'm sorry I snapped at you, he said. She strode past him like she owned the place, which she did. When she reached the middle of the room, she stopped to stare at the indent that remained in the comforter. She pivoted toward him and drew a deep breath. If anyone understands pushing people away on purpose, it's me. He leaned against the door by the wall, tucking his hands behind his back. To discourage a long conversation, he kept quiet. Gentry didn't take the hint. Please tell me what's wrong. You need to talk to someone so it doesn't eat you up. Unfortunately for you, I'm all you've got right now, even if you don't consider me a friend. She sat on the bed, then stretched out on one side, supporting her head with her hand. Believe it or not, I'm a good listener. So go on. Share. He caught himself gawking at her long form sprawled across his bed before his brain circled back to the conversation. No way would he risk moving from his safe spot by the door. Knowing Gentry wouldn't stop until she satisfied her demand, he said. Archer finally replied to my email with terrible news. He paused, expecting a barrage of questions and guesses. When she remained quiet, he shifted his weight to his other leg. A friend of ours was shot, and her young son kidnapped. Gentry pushed herself upright, her forehead wrinkling above a frown. Oh my God, that's awful. Yes. There wasn't more to say. Gentry didn't know Marie. She didn't know Haiti. She didn't know a lot of things, and he had to remember that. Did she die? Yes. He nodded, trying not to picture Marie's gentle face warped by fear and panic. She was killed. Gentry flattened her hand against her chest. How old is her son? 10. Oh, no. Both hands covered her mouth. She shook her head as if that could change the story. I'm so sorry. What happens now? I don't know. There'll probably be a ransom demand, but sometimes people are taken and you never learn what happened. Wait a second. She scrambled to her feet, eyes filling with a different kind of alarm. You mean this kind of thing is common? Not as common as it was 6 or 7 years ago, but it still happens, especially in certain areas of the country. She raised her hands out from her sides. Then you should not go back there, Ian. No. Should I hide here in obscene luxury and let it be someone else's problem? Absolutely. Yes, you should. You've done more than most already. It's okay to retire from that life now. Her red hair seemed to vibrate with the vehemence of her voice. No. Well, don't count on me to help raise money so you can return to a place where you could get killed or kidnapped, and I won't let my sister help you either. This isn't about you or what you will or won't do to stop me. He waved her off. And you think you're a good listener. I did listen. I heard what you said and what you didn't say. What you never say. There's something you're not telling me. Something about why you're determined to risk your life. She crossed her arms. Was Marie someone special? He rolled his eyes. Who knew you were prone to romantic fancies? Fine. If it isn't love, then what's driving you? You're relentless. You've let it destroy your last relationship. Worse, you're so fixated on it, you punish yourself for enjoying anything normal. I don't punish myself. He pushed off the wall and paced. This conversation is over. I'm going back with or without your help. If I were you, I'd use the next couple of weeks to figure out your situation with Colt, because I won't be here much longer. I never expected you would be. But am I supposed to let you fly off and never know what happens to you? You didn't even know me 8 days ago. But I know you now. You'll forget about me just as quickly, especially once Smith shows up. He might be throwing wild jabs at her, but he just clocked himself with that one. Gentry caught his arm and gently pushed him against the wall, crowding him with her heat and perfume and all that loose hair. How can you be so brave about some things, yet such a coward now? How am I a coward? Pretending we're not friends? Pretending you don't watch me when you think I'm not paying attention? Gentry flexed the power of her physical appeal, which made her particularly lethal. She placed her hands on the wall on either side of him, pressing forward until they were nose to nose. I don't run into disaster areas, but at least I'm not afraid to admit that I won't be forgetting you any faster than you'll forget me. Her voice had gone husky at the end of her rant, and her gaze dipped to his mouth. If you're hurting, let me help you feel better. If you want to make something good of the life you've been given, follow your heart, Ian. He might be standing there, nearly naked, practically skin to skin, with a scantily dressed goddess, but he still had willpower. Or so he thought, until she pressed her lips to his clavicle. God help him. His hands shot to her hips. He gripped the flimsy cotton fabric in his palms and then let it go, skimming his hands around the curve of her ass. She held still, letting him touch her. Eyes wide open, her gaze locked on his, she held herself mere inches away from him. Her breath heated his skin. The bedroom turned hotter than Haiti, with his heart beating like a boula drum. Gentry's hands remained planted on the wall as he traced his fingers along the outline of her waist and up her spine. He hesitated when his hands reached the underside of her breasts. 3 heavy breaths later, he tenderly cupped the weight of her in his palms. The thinnest cotton separated their skin, yet somehow touching her like this seemed infinitely more intimate than if he'd removed her clothes. When his thumbs brushed against the buds of her nipples, her eyelids fluttered. Her response unlocked the last bit of his resistance, so he kissed her. She fell against him, her fingers threading through his hair. Thankfully, the wall supported them, because his knees were giving out. Chapter 9 Risk. According to Merriam-Webster, possibility of loss or injury, peril. According to me, kissing Ian. A year of celibacy urged Gentry to climb Ian's body like a tree. She would have if her arms and legs weren't laden with want. Whether her long dry spell or Ian's magic touch caused her full-body inferno almost didn't matter. Except it did, because she suspected that making love with Ian would be a singular experience, figuratively and literally. In almost any other case, that result would fall somewhere between fine with her and perfect. With Ian, she grudgingly admitted that a one and done would not, in fact, be enough. Right now, her heart and head were too steeped in happiness hormones to care about self-preservation. His firm chest and shoulder muscles flexed with each pass of her hand. The growly sound at the back of his throat made her wet with longing. "Ian," she panted, now running her hands down his waist. Her body trembled with eager anticipation, and that rarely happened. Gently reached between his legs, to discover that every part of his body was long and hard. Wait. He grabbed her wrist, prying her hand away. Stop. Ian shook his head, as if awakening from a dream or possibly a nightmare. Why? She leaned closer, hoping another kiss would clear whatever imaginary hurdle he'd hit. For a second, she thought she'd won the little contest, but he pushed back again, this time breaking free and stepping away. We shouldn't do this. His hungry gaze roamed her body. He pressed the heels of his palms to his eyes. Go downstairs, please. I don't understand. I think you do. I'm gone as soon as I can afford to. You're hunting for Colt's dad? This? He gestured between them. Can't lead anywhere good. Oh, I beg to differ. I think it's pretty obvious we could both benefit from a good... Don't say it, Gentry. He cut her off. Don't reduce all this to that. So, you admit that this is something. Ian crossed his arms and looked at his feet. She supposed that was as much of an answer as she would get tonight. Options came to mind. A. Strip and seduce. B. Throw that stupid baseball on his dresser at him. Or C. Sarcasm. Any of those things would get his attention and give her a chance to wear him down. But Ian was unlike any man she'd ever met, and although she didn't always understand him, she suspected those antics would push him further away. She stood there, waiting for him to do or say something. When he refused to even meet her gaze, she walked from the room. Closing his door behind her, she left him with his precious solitude. That might be the most perplexing thing of all. She'd been alone for much of her life, granted, some of it self-imposed in a twisted kind of rebellion. Still, she couldn't imagine choosing it now when faced with the possibility of something genuine. Not that she had much practice with genuine relationships. Could this be one if neither of them ran or pushed the other one away? Ian swore he wouldn't be anything more than a cameo appearance in her life. A vivid, memorable one, like Smith, but still merely temporary. Temporary had always been enough before. But despite his behavior tonight, Ian had swept into her world and opened her heart. She couldn't pretend that loneliness didn't hurt anymore. Her siblings' loving relationships glittered like another medal for an achievement that eluded her. Her only solace now was Colt. With him around, she'd never be totally alone again. Gentry snuggled Colt to her chest for comfort after her restless night. She'd role-played cool detachment in her head at least 20 times since waking at 5:30. The clock now read 8:40. She'd put off facing Ian as long as possible. Time to be a grown-up. When she emerged from her room, she saw him sitting on the tufted leather ottoman, elbows on his knees, head down, surrounded by strangely gloomy dove-gray walls. She could blame that flatness on the cloudy Oregon weather, or admit that it had a lot to do with her mood. Ian stood when she and Colt entered the room. Good morning. The circles under his eyes were darker than hers. She would be sympathetic if their shitty night hadn't been his decision. Maybe for some. She immediately regretted revealing that his rejection had hurt her. Turning her back to Ian, she kissed Colt's face several times before putting him in the baby swing. Colt treated her to a smile, a real smile. He hadn't smiled often in his young life, but the big, toothless thing of beauty made her missteps with Ian irrelevant. She lightly brushed Colt's silky hair and tickled under his chin, wishing she could play hooky and spend the whole day with him. "Mommy will see you later, Boo. I love you." Sparing Ian a brief glance after grabbing her laptop bag, she said, "I'll be home by 6.
"Gentry, wait," he began.
She waved him off, keeping her chin up even as her gaze fell to a distant spot on the floor. "I can't be late when Hunter's already angry about Ty. No need to rehash last night, either. I got the message. When you're set to leave, I'd appreciate a few days' notice." With a sharp nod, she marched into the garage without looking back, so she didn't see his reaction. All she did know was that he didn't burst into the garage to apologize before she drove away. Fortunately, a lengthy to-do list at work forced her thoughts away from Ian. She worked with the graphic designer all morning to generate messaging and memes for their social media platforms, now that the marketing team had voted unanimously for her "Quench Your Thirst for a Better World" slogan. That win took the sting out of her personal situation, although it also reminded her of time spent on the deck with Ian. Enough pining. Time to capitalize on her wave of success. She stopped by Becky's workstation on her way to lunch. "Wanna grab a quick bite at Coco's?" Becky held up her brown bag.
"I'm all set, thanks."
"I'll order takeout so we can eat here," Gentry offered, referring to the cafe tables on the covered patio that gave the employees an al fresco dining option, rain or shine.
"Maybe another time, Gentry."
Becky glanced around, as if worried someone else was listening. Gentry became acutely aware that her coworker stations were suddenly buzzing with busy work.
"Did I do something to offend you?"
"No."
"Really? Because it seems like, since I've returned from maternity leave, you've kept your distance." Becky cleared her throat, but no one around them came to her rescue.
"It's not personal. I've been super busy. If this product launch flops, heads will roll."
"You should still take a break now and then, so you don't burn out."
"Of course you'd say that. You have nothing to lose. The rest of us have our jobs at stake."
Hunter's warnings raced through Gentry's mind, but she wasn't like him. She could only do so much pandering and proving herself before reaching the end of her admittedly short rope. "That's some seriously flawed logic."
"Excuse me?"
Becky's left brow rose.
"You heard me. In case you forgot, as an owner, I took a big gamble when I voted to give Hunter's idea the green light instead of selling the company. So, in fact, I have more to lose than any of you if this launch goes south. In fact, thanks to my vote, you all still have jobs. Remember that the next time you snub me."
"Gentry!" Her mother's voice squashed Gentry's sense of victory. Everything fell silent for about 5 seconds, then the frantic typing resumed, surrounding her with a keyboard symphony, the perfect soundtrack for a workplace scolding. Ignoring the inevitable, Gentry kept her gaze locked on Becky. Her mother cleared her throat.
"I'd like to speak with you. In my office?"
Gentry affected a bright smile before facing her mom.
"Certainly, Mother. Lead the way."
Once they were in her mom's office, with the door closed, Gentry dropped onto the silk-covered Charlemagne armchair across from her mother's desk. Her heels sank into the crimson Tibetan rug. Today, its thick pile would serve an important secondary service, absorbing the sound of raised voices.
She crossed her legs, letting one swing back and forth, knowing Ian's rejection had contributed to her taunting Becky. Maybe she'd apologize later. If Becky also apologized.
I don't suppose you're about to congratulate me.
Don't be smart. Her mother folded her hands on her desk. You look like hell. Did Colt have a bad night?
He'd slept for almost 5 straight hours for the first time. More sleep than she'd gotten last night, in fact.
Colt's fine. I'm fine.
Gentry set her hands on the chair's arms, preparing to run.
Is that all?
Hardly, her mother sighed. You can't threaten employees, Gentry. We don't need HR trouble. Especially not now.
What are you talking about? I report to Becky, not the other way around. If anything, I should be the one filing complaints. Everyone here treats me like I don't belong.
Her mother quickly checked something on her computer screen while saying, Will lording your ownership over everybody make them treat you better?
At this point, I don't care. I'm sick of not getting credit for the work I've done. You certainly haven't helped matters either.
Why does every mistake you make end up being my fault? Your favorite pastime is recounting all the ways I've failed you. Her mother shook her head. Yet, now your son's at home with a nanny.
He won't be with a nanny for long.
The look on Ian's face last night resurfaced, making her heart skip. Not that her mom's response was on point. Gentry's childhood complaints weren't only about having a nanny. They were about the scraps of attention she'd gotten from her absentee family most of her life. Let's not get sidetracked. What I'm saying now is that you go so far out of your way to make sure there's no whiff of favoritism here. You never give me credit for my contributions. If you don't believe I deserve to be here, why would they give me a chance?
No one deserves anything, Gentry. Your father built this company from nothing. For almost 3 decades, I've helped him, and Hunter has too.
But believe me, we paid our dues, and you have to pay yours. You've been handed an opportunity, but it's up to you to have the grit to see it through. My job isn't to make that easier for you, and if I did, it would actually make things worse. Gentry stood, suddenly sick of herself and her need for acceptance. It never worked out. What she wanted remained visible but out of reach, locked behind an impenetrable glass wall.
Sit, her mother pointed at the empty chair.
No. Gentry gripped the wood frame of its back. If you want to discuss one of my projects, fire away. I'll fill you in on the awesome ideas we came up with this morning. But I won't sit through a lecture when I only defended myself after Becky insulted me.
She did?
Her mother's gaze sharpened.
Oh, now you want the whole story.
Yes, please. I'd like to be well informed in case this lands on Ross Hardy's desk.
Ross Hardy was the head of HR.
A decent, if conservative, guy.
Gentry recapped the entire exchange, starting with her lunch invitation. If she'd thought her mother would side with her after hearing all the facts, she'd been high.
Let's be honest. You have a reputation of your own making to overcome around here. From everyone's perspective but yours, you've carried a humongous chip on your shoulder while leading a decadent life. If you want respect, my advice is to keep your head down and do your job. It takes more than a few months and a handful of good ideas to prove your worth.
If Gentry's eyes weren't already black and blue from the lack of sleep, that 1-2 punch would have done the trick.
Why did she bother? She could so easily stay at home, blog, take photographs, and be with her son. The past 12 hours had drained Gentry of her fight.
Are we done? I'd like to grab lunch and get back to work.
Fine. Some mothers might offer to join their child for lunch in a show of solidarity or at least compassion. Hers waved Gentry away and returned her attention to her computer. Gentry closed her mother's door and strolled past the workstations with her eyes fixed on the exit sign. On her way out of the building, she passed a group of three co-workers. They stopped talking as she approached. She strode past them, flashing a tight smile. Any other time she might have made a flip remark, but she didn't need Ross or Hunter on her case. Now, she had no one to turn to. Even Colby, who might try to be helpful, would probably still agree with her mother's advice. All the changes she'd undergone for Colt had left her vulnerable and weak, and no better off. When she reached the parking lot, she trotted toward her car. Sitting in her front seat, she gripped the steering wheel. It started raining, which suited her perfectly. She stared at the black Acura parked in front of her car, tears burning in her eyes. When someone else approached a nearby car, she pretended to be looking at herself in her rearview mirror rather than look like a lunatic. Screw it. She fired up the engine, even though she wasn't hungry. She knew she should eat something. Most of all, she needed to get away from Cabot Tea and think. While Ian taped his and Colt's artwork to the refrigerator, an unexpected knock at the door startled him. At first, he thought Gentry had decided to stop by for lunch, as she'd done once last week. But Gentry wouldn't knock on her own door. Through the peephole, he watched Colby shake out her umbrella. Before she rang the bell and woke Colt up from his morning nap, he opened the door.
Hey, Colby, what's up?
Colby set her wet umbrella outside before stepping into the entry.
I'm on my way to the restaurant, but I wanted to drop off some information.
Is this a bad time?
It's a good time, actually. Colt's still asleep.
So we have 5 minutes, maybe 10? She laughed, which made her eyes curl even more at the outer edges.
Something like that, he smiled.
Colby set her leather bag on the table and opened it to retrieve whatever she'd brought with him. She reminded him of a modern-day Audrey Hepburn. Simple hairstyle, light makeup, a conservative but feminine navy blue dress. He crossed his arms, suddenly self-conscious of his uncombed hair, aging U2 t-shirt, and bare feet. She turned and handed him a manila envelope. It seemed Gentry had not yet forbidden Colby from helping.
I've made a short list of contacts. If you like, I'll reach out to them first, or you can reference me when you contact them. One in particular might be of interest. Marcus Fairfax of Fairfax Auto Palace.
The luxury car dealer?
Yes. He has a history of philanthropy. Better yet, his 23-year-old son is an EMT who does a lot of local charitable work. I think your project could interest them. Given their multiple dealerships, they may be able to get vehicles at a good price.
That's an amazing lead. Thank you.
Happy to help. Have you contacted the World Health Organization yet? Based on your plans, it might be an important ally.
Archer is dealing with them, and other healthcare groups.
He looked at the envelope.
I wish I could repay this favor. Gentry jumped in and asked for your help so fast, I wasn't prepared.
Colby's quick smile appeared. She can be excitable and impulsive, But that's part of her charm, I think.
She's unpredictable.
He felt a tug at the corners of his mouth. I don't know where she got that, Jean. None of the rest of us do much without a plan. She'd say we overthink. I suppose there's some truth in that. Colby grinned. Anyway, if you have questions about any of that information, call me.
Thanks.
He waved the envelope in the air.
I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. She grimaced, hesitating. Would you mind if I use the restroom before I go?
Of course.
After she dashed down the hall, Ian opened the envelope and pulled out the memo. If he hadn't known Colby had been a lawyer, he'd guess it from the organized outline of information. Names, addresses, emails and phone numbers, bios, donor histories, everything arranged alphabetically. His gaze honed in on Marcus Fairfax's bio. When Colby returned to the living room, her attention snagged on Quackers, who'd been discarded on the ottoman. She came to a complete stop, eyes wide. Oh, God, I can't believe she still has that thing. She wandered across the room in a trance and picked up the raggedy stuffed toy, gently wiggling it. A sentimental smile appeared. Hello, Quackers.
You know this duck?
Of course. Colby stared at the ratty toy and shook her head. She wouldn't let anyone touch him for years. She'd carry him around like this. Colby stuffed Quackers under her armpit when she needed to use both hands.
Wow.
He'd been watching Gentry force that old thing on Colt every day.
What made it so special?
Hunter gave it to her. She must have been 5 or 6 at the time. He was around 14 and had his first paying job at CTC that summer. Less than minimum wage, and straight from our dad's pocket, no doubt. She removed the toy from her underarm and petted it. Anyway, he bought it for her birthday.
Didn't she get other gifts that year?
You've met Jenna and seen that house, right? Her sarcastic tone matched her smirk. Getting enough toys was never the problem.
Then why was this duck a big deal?
Colby grew quiet, as if searching her thoughts for the right words. She set Quackers back on the ottoman and hugged herself. Hunter and I were always close, while Gentry was younger and lived with my dad. We didn't mean to exclude her, but we were adolescents, still learning to handle our new family dynamic. We were probably a little jealous, too, because she had our dad.
And a pool.
Colby laughed at how foolish kids' priorities could be. Then she settled her hand across her heart. If you had seen her face when Hunter handed her a present that he'd bought with his own money, it wouldn't have mattered what was in that box. To her, it meant everything. Meant she mattered. Though, I doubt Hunter remembers. She let her hand fall and sighed. We should have paid more attention to her when we were younger. It's one of my big regrets. Ian hadn't had any siblings or sense of a normal family, and that had never bothered him much in the past.
You've got time now.
I know. But years of not being close have made her prickly and defensive, even when, deep, deep down, I think she's still yearning for her place. Maybe that's why she's tried on so many different hats. Now she has Colt, though. The romantic in me keeps hoping she'll let herself fall in love and create her own little family. Who knows? Maybe Colt's dad could turn out to be her prince, after all.
You think?
His hands balled at his sides until he flexed them. More like a wish, I suppose. I know something about feeling alone, even when surrounded by family. And I also know how love can grow in the most unexpected ways.
Colby pressed her lips into a tight line.
It's a nice dream, anyway.
He'd officially gotten in over his head in this conversation. A cynic, I see. I suppose your experiences haven't left much room for romance. She tipped her head, and he saw a light flicker in her hazel eyes. He could tell she'd formed a thought she chose not to share.
I'd better let you relax before the little rugrat wakes up. Give Colt a kiss from me.
Will do.
He followed her to the door.
Thanks again for the notes.
You're welcome.
Ian closed the door after Colby left. He padded through the house and picked up Quackers. Love-worn, not ratty. That designation improved Quackers' appeal. On the other hand, his chest ached a little as he imagined Gentry clutching this toy as some kind of lifeline to love, to a family that was too busy to notice that she needed more from them. Gentry's wounds weren't life-threatening in a traditional sense, yet they were real and painful. He'd been struggling all night and morning to make sense of his choices, worrying about Marie's son, Timmy, worrying about his father's legacy and wishes, questioning his life in the face of Gentry's accusations. When he'd taken this job, he'd planned to leave Gentry better off than when he arrived. Last night proved how far short he'd fallen on that goal. He had a couple of weeks to do better, so he could leave her here with some peace of mind, to show her that she didn't need to cling to an old toy to feel loved. Ian was peeling an orange in the kitchen when he heard Gentry drop her bag in the hall near her bedroom. From his spot by the refrigerator, he saw her stride past the kitchen, straight to the playpen, where Colt restlessly wriggled his arms and legs. She lifted him out of his prison and kissed him, whispering things too quietly for Ian to make out the words. With her back still turned to him, she asked, "Any trouble today?"
"No. I think the infection is definitely gone. He ate well, napped."
Then, because she refused to look at him, Ian added, "Colby stopped by."
She swiveled.
"Why?"
"She dropped off some information, fundraising leads for me."
He approached Gentry as one might approach a grenade and nodded toward Quackers.
"She also gave me the scoop on him."
Gentry scowled.
"I have no idea what you're talking about. There's no scoop."
"I asked why you were so attached to that mangy thing."
"He's not mangy," she interrupted.
"Your sister said Hunter gave it to you when you were little."
Gentry's nostrils flared a touch, but she shuddered all emotion and shrugged.
"Who remembers?"
"Apparently Colby does."
He could stop. Or not.
"In fact, it opened up a bunch of memories for her. Not all of them good."
Gentry's frown returned. With an acerbic lilt, she said, "Who knew Quackers was such a gateway to the past?"
"There's more."
"Do tell." She swayed with her son gripped tightly in her arms.
"She has regrets about the way she behaved back then."
"Why are we talking about this?"
Gentry abruptly ended the conversation by kissing Colt and turning away, but not before Ian noticed the flush rising up her neck and cheeks. So much nonsense over a toy. He raised his hands, stepping back. Now who was being the coward, he thought.
"Sorry, just making small talk."
"No need. You're off the clock and free to do whatever it is you need to do to secure your exit strategy."
She turned on her heel and marched toward her room with Colt. Message received. She was still pissed about last night. Her arrival hadn't gone at all as he'd planned. She'd have to come into the kitchen sooner or later, if only to eat or drink. Probably both. Then she'd see what he'd left for her on the refrigerator. For now, he'd wait on the deck and finish his orange. The rain had stopped hours ago. Few things soothed him like the scent of a loamy Oregon forest. Pretty much the opposite of the burned wood and trash odors of Haiti's many and continual bonfires. As predicted, Gentry wandered back to the kitchen about 30 minutes later. She must have settled Colt, or maybe she was fixing him a bottle. He watched through the plate glass as she stopped at the refrigerator and fingered his peace offering. He'd dipped Colt's feet in washable blue paint and pressed them to a sheet of computer paper, turning those feet into the wings of a badly drawn butterfly. Across the top of the page, he'd typed a quote he'd heard before. "A mom's hug lasts long after she lets go," in the hope that it might alleviate some of the guilt she battled every day when she left for work. He slid the glass door open and stepped inside. She looked up as he closed it. "Look at this, a humanitarian and an artist." Her expression remained closed, but her voice had mellowed. Ian remembered Colby's observation about Gentry's defensive mechanisms, so he wasn't offended by her lack of gratitude.
"Picasso's got nothing on me," he hesitated.
"I thought you might like to take that to work."
"Thank you."
She opened the refrigerator door and pulled out the pink box of cheesecake she'd bought earlier in the week. "Although I may not be working there much longer." He stopped his approach, stunned. He knew she'd been struggling to juggle the demands of the launch with her general lack of sleep. But had she been fired?
"Why not?"
"My reasons for working there aren't really paying off. At least, not enough to make the humiliation worth it."
She waved the thought away and grabbed a fork. Without bothering to plate a slice, she opened the lid and ate directly from the box.
"Maybe Colt's better off if I stay home. I could pursue photography. We'd be free to travel, which might come in handy if we find Smith."
She looked right at him.
"Might as well be the cliche everyone already thinks I am. At least it'd be fun."
"You're a lot of things, but clichéd isn't one of them."
"Ha." A disbelieving grin popped into place. "You've been making assumptions about me from the minute you walked through my door."
"Everyone has first impressions." He shrugged unapologetically. "They change when people learn more about each other. One thing I hadn't thought about you until right now was that you were a quitter."
"And here I thought McJay had retired on Saturday. Guess you can't help yourself."
She stared at him while shoving a huge chunk of cheesecake into her mouth. He should walk away now, because it'd be easier for both of them if they maintained a barely cordial relationship until he left. He turned to go, but then whirled around and crossed to her, pulling the remains of the cheesecake away.
"Stop it."
She reached for the cheesecake.
"Are you judging my diet now, too?"
He clasped her wrist.
"Stop pretending you don't care about anything. We both know that's a lie. Let's deal with last night like grown-ups."
She pulled free from his grasp.
"This is me being a grown-up. What happened? Or didn't happen? Last night is no big deal, so get over yourself."
"Now who's the coward?"
Instead of another dig, she ducked to get around him in an effort to flee the kitchen. He caught her by the waist and tugged her against his stomach,
keeping his arms wrapped around her waist.
You think I put on the brakes last night because I don't care, but that's not true. I stopped because I do care.
Let go, she broke free. I don't know what Colby's said today that has you feeling sorry for myself and making art to cheer me up, but I'm fine. I don't need pity.
That's not what this is.
What is it?
Honesty. I'm clearing the air so we can go back to being friends.
From not friends to make-out buddies to hands-off, now we're friends again. Well, thanks for clearing that up.
He wilted against the countertop.
You don't make anything easy.
So I'm told. Fortunately, you won't have to deal with me for much longer.
What don't you get, Gentry? I can't afford to care more. I tried that once with my ex, Farah, and it didn't turn out well.
I try to learn from my mistakes. My life's not compatible with relationships.
He gripped the countertop behind him, forcing the next thought out, despite some regret.
You need a guy, Smith or someone else, who can help you build a family for your son.
Tapping her foot, she crossed her arms.
On that last part, we mostly agree.
Finally.
He nodded, thinking she'd beat a hasty exit now. Instead, she closed the gap between them and put her hands on his chest.
But in case you're wrong about all the rest.
She kissed him.
The sensual kiss tasted like sweetened almond. Instinct forced his arms around her before he thought better of it. Her body, soft in all the right places, made his hot and hard. But as much as he wanted her, the last thing Gentry Cabot needed was to get close to another person who would walk out of her life.
Gentry.
He broke the kiss, but hugged her tight.
We both know the timing is wrong.
The story of my life.
She cupped his face, a sad smile on her own, then let her hands drop. With a half shrug, she said,
Guess we'll settle for friendship, but don't expect much. I don't have a lot of practice with that, either.
Chapter 10
Matchmake. According to Merriam-Webster, to bring about a marriage, especially by scheming. According to me, one thing I do better than Colby.
A stiff breeze carried the scent of wisteria, which wrapped its way around the stone columns of CTC's covered patio, while the sun played hide-and-seek with cumulus clouds. Staff members occupied about half the teak and aluminum cafe tables, leaving few options for privacy. Privacy from others was something Gentry now chose for herself, despite her decision to tough it out at CTC. I forgot how cozy this patio is. Colby set a white paper bag on the corner table Gentry selected and unpacked the to-go containers Alec had prepared for them. Hunter and Dad couldn't join us for lunch? Actually, I wanted to talk to you alone. For 3 days, Gentry had been mulling over Colby and Ian's private chat about quackers. Super. Because I also have something personal to discuss, too. Colby took a seat. Her sister's glowing face and broad smile tipped Gentry off to big news. May I go first, please? Are you pregnant? Gentry clapped, delighted by the idea of Colt gaining another cousin. No, she laughed, poking Gentry's arm. I'm a bit more traditional than you, so we're waiting until after the wedding. But what a perfect segue. Ah, you finally set a date. Gentry opened the calendar on her phone and waited for the information. Yes, we did. September 30th. Gentry set the phone down.
That's not even 3 full months from now. How will you arrange everything in time?
It'll be small. 30 or so guests.
Colby creased the napkin on her lap, eyes glued to her hands.
Given all the history, we don't want a lavish production, but I also don't want to elope.
She left, like I did with Mark, unsaid.
Gentry patted her sister's shoulder.
Dad will be thrilled.
Leslie, too.
Will it be at a certainty?
Yes. If the weather cooperates, we'll have the ceremony in the lakeside gazebo, then have the reception on the patio. Otherwise, we'll do everything inside.
And the honeymoon?
Gentry wiggled her brows.
Alec wants to take me to Mougins and then tour the French wine regions along the coast.
Her sister's smile returned in full force.
I can't wait to see where he lived and worked all those years.
Sounds like heaven.
I'm so happy for you.
Gentry remembered the first time she saw Alec walk into a certain tea after he'd disappeared for a year.
The way he'd looked at Colby had told Gentry everything she needed to know, so she'd done whatever she could, including flirt with him, to prod her sister into action.
It hadn't been easy, but now Gentry could tease her.
You owe me big for stepping aside last fall.
Ha ha, Colby chuckled before sampling the burrata with pesto, pine nuts, and some kind of yellow flour.
But with that in mind, I'd love it if you'd be my maid of honor.
Me?
Gentry pointed at herself with surprise.
Yes, you.
Colby's expression pinched in confusion.
Not Sarah or your mom?
My mother will revel in her mother of the bride role. Sarah will be a bridesmaid, of course, but you're my sister. I want you beside me.
Gentry leaned on her elbows, bracelets hitting the metal edge of the table.
You trust me to plan the bachelorette party?
No tattoos or strippers.
Colby raised her index finger, then took another bite of the burrata.
You're no fun, Gentry teased.
It's pretty well established that you got all the fun genes.
Colby winked and set her fork down.
So is that a yes?
Gentry didn't know why she could never accept any show of affection without suspicion, but she replied,
Are you asking because you think my feelings would be hurt if you chose Sarah?
Colby flinched, her voice thin.
Why would you think that?
Because Ian was full of theories about quackers after your recent visit. It sounded like you've come to a bunch of conclusions about me and about our past.
Gentry stared at the shrimp salad she'd been picking at.
I don't want you or him or anyone else being nice to me out of some kind of guilt complex.
Colby raked her hand through her hair, sighing.
I'm sorry if I upset you. You know I've been trying to be closer, but not out of pity. I was too young and then too preoccupied to notice sooner. Now I know that I missed out on having a relationship with my sister, and I'm trying to fix it.
Is that so wrong?
No.
Inside, Gentry battled the discomfort of being vulnerable.
I wouldn't be working here, she gestured around CTC, if I didn't want Colt to grow up surrounded by family.
Colt, huh?
Yes, Colt. I'm already grown. The past can't change my future.
Frankly, I'm not sure working here will either.
Hold that thought for a sec, but...
Colby grabbed her hand.
Relationships are always changing. Everything we do and say brings us closer or pulls us apart. But it takes two people who are willing to be vulnerable. Most of the time, you're guarded.